Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey everyone, welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. Corey and Shad here, your hosts for this weekend edition, also your hosts throughout the week on our website, kereport.com, and podcast, The KE Report. On this weekend show, you can look forward to more bigger picture comments on the commodity sector. We're going to start off with metals and mining, and in the second half of the show, we're going to transition over to the energy sector. Simply because, look, I know a lot of our listeners care about both of those areas, and quite frankly, both of those areas are doing quite well, especially from the underlying commodity price and some companies, maybe more so in the energy sector, but we are starting off with Matt Geiger, managing partner at MJG Capital. Now, Matt, as I mentioned, we're focusing more on metals and mining. Let's start with gold. As we're recording this, gold still holding up above 2,000. Keeps sniffing at breaking to all-time highs. Hasn't quite done that yet. But, Matt, we're getting so many questions from people saying, is this move in gold real? Will it finally break out? And more importantly, will it finally hold those breakout levels? What are your thoughts?
Well, it's good to be back on the program, Corey. Thanks for having me. Frankly, I do think that this gold move is real. And there's a few factors here. The first is that each proper move in precious metals, when you look back historically, has begun from a point of capitulation. Just look, think late 2015, before the crazy 9 months that we had between January and late Q3 2016. Think February, March 2020, with the absolute COVID panic that we saw that set the stage for a rip-roaring rally between, April 2020 through, late 2020. We'll say September 2020. And I think we saw the same thing here. Think of September, October of last year. We had just experienced a grinding two-year drawdown in precious metals and precious metal equities when a lot of the rest of the metal complex, at least for the majority of that period, were outperforming. Folks were losing faith. And not only that, we saw the actual price of physical gold fall for 7 consecutive months. I believe it was between March and September of 2022, which hasn't happened in at least 40 years. And I'm quite a bit longer than that, to my understanding, but at least 40 years. So sentiment was at a very low level come October. And it's been a powerful move since. A second factor that makes me think this move is real is that it's playing out largely as it should. So far, you will have seen that the physical metals, gold, silver, platinum, and palladium, the major ETFs, the GDX, GDXJ, SIL, SILG, and the blue chip precious metal miners and the blue chip streamers have gotten most all of the attention. And that's normal for the early stage of a proper move in precious metals. I'll call attention to Mike Horner on Twitter. He put out a good tweet, and he's a good follow, showing that the large miners beta to gold that we've seen since late Q3 or early Q4 of last year is right in line with what we've seen in previous precious metal rallies, roughly 2x beta. So all is going to plan, and we've yet to see the move really trickle down to the juniors, which we can get into it in a little bit. The contrarian in me actually isn't too disappointed about that, even though we are heavily weighted within MJG to juniors with a median market cap of around 50 million US, we'll say 60 million Canadian as it stands. But that to me actually speaks to the potential longevity of this move. And the final factor here is just the macro backdrop that we have. It's frankly perfect between central bank buying of gold. Last year we saw record volumes of gold bought by central banks, more in any single year going all the way back to the early 1950s when records were first started being kept for this. And this buying has continued at least through Q1 2023. We have public doubts about the Western banking system, thanks to the high profile failures and bailouts that we've seen with Signature Bank, First Republic, SVB and you know, most importantly, Credit Suisse. That's all just occurred in the past 8 to 12 weeks here. We have the Fed's historic rate hiking campaign coming to its end point. Whether there's one or two hikes remaining, if that really misses the point, we've gone from 0 to 5% in a very short period of time, and we're right at the end game here. That's supportive of gold. And then, of course, the looming debt ceiling fight, which the market knows is on the horizon, but we've yet to really see it make headlines. But that'll change. Janet Yellen, all the way back in January, was warning that we're going to start having issues funding our obligations as soon as June of 2023. So really just 60 days away from her date. And yeah, due to the dynamics in the Republican-controlled House, as well as the lesson learned by the Biden White House from the Obama administration, that it's not in Democrats' interest to negotiate whatsoever about debt ceiling increases, I think this one is truly going to go to the brink. Odds are that they will come to a resolution ultimately, but that's not a guarantee. And there's a non-zero chance of at least a pseudo default here. So I really can't think of a more potent macro backdrop for a continued move in precious metals prices.
Yeah, Matt, you really summed it up well there. And if people think back to the last time the debt ceiling debate got this heated, or people are postulating it'll get that heated, it was back in 2011 when gold actually broke out to a new all-time high in the previous cycle. And the precious metals have done well. As you noted, I mean, gold's up $400 from where it bottomed in November at 1618. It's over 2020 today, so at the time of this recording. And silver's gone from 1740 up over 25. So big moves in the metals. As you mentioned, the big boy miners, the royalty and streaming companies have gotten a bid. That is normal to see capital flow into the larger cap companies first. Yep. But Matt, you touched on something I want to hit on. I want to get your thoughts on, and that is the juniors. You know, a lot of people are still looking at their portfolios, and some people are petting their precious mining stock saying, what about my junior? When's it going to move? So maybe just speak to how you look at that and how the cycle playing through that, you know, eventually the capital will trickle down into the earlier stage companies.
Yeah, well put, Shad. And look, I understand the frustration. I'll actually say that MJG had a very strong Q1, but that was more driven by a couple specific major outperformers within the portfolio, rather than a rising tide lifting all boats scenario. So I do feel that frustration. You know, I'm looking today at the MJG portfolio. Half of it's in the red today, even though we have gold up and silver up, and the general markets also in a risk and on move. But that's just the way that this works, though. In a proper precious metals move, and I do believe that this move is for real, you will ultimately see the juniors play catch up and then some. You know, and I wouldn't be surprised actually, if we see this move beginning over the next 4 to 8 weeks. So I think we're closer to the juniors moving than not. You know, right now, there's a major amount of financing activity going on. Maybe we can touch on that in more detail. But I think over the next 2, 3, 4 weeks, we're going to see a lot of juniors cash up. I think they will be successful in many of these financing endeavors. And there's going to be a ton of news flow over the next 6 months. So that combination of news flow and a positive macro backdrop for precious metals, I think it's just a question of time. I mean, I think back to April, May, and really the first half of June of 2020. That was also an incredibly frustrating period where the components of the MJG portfolio, they were moving a percent or two, you know, per week. So we were gaining some ground. And that's the case here. I mean, the TSXV is up double digits this year, so that should be pointed out. But, you know, we were missing out on major moves in the actual physical metals and the larger blue chip, you know, better known, more liquid names. And it was frustrating. It was quite the test of faith. But then sure enough, right around mid-June, boom, the switch went off. And over the next 90 days, major catch-up was played, and then some. We ended up the year 115%, due almost entirely to our precious metal-focused holdings. So when that move does come, it happens quickly. And I would urge folks to keep the faith. If you believe that this move in precious metals is real, then it will trickle down to the juniors. It's just a question of timing.
if we're talking timing, and look, some of the majors have moved, but those are also still a fair bit off of their highs. I was going through the charts of Anglo, Hecla, Yamana, even Barrick and Newmont. They're still off their highs. So, Matt, do you think that the majors have a potential of actually breaking to new all-time highs, almost in a way following gold?
I think so. Yeah, I think if we see gold push to all-time highs and through, you know, convincingly through the 2100 level and maintaining that level, if not, you know, going quite a bit higher, it is just a matter of time before we see the major miners start to test their all-time highs. So I don't think that's too complex. I do think, however, that the juniors can move well before then, i.e. we don't need to see the major miners reaching their all-time highs, you know, before the money starts to trickle down to the juniors. But I think we see the juniors start to move, you know, in anticipation of that.
Well, Matt, you mentioned that to us off mic that you've seen an avalanche of financings and touched on it a little bit in your first answer. You know, in this kind of an environment where you are seeing a little bit more interest in the precious metal sector and really just in critical minerals and the resource sector in general, there's a lot of companies that are cashed up in a good position to do work. There's other companies, though, with their hat out looking to put some cash in the till. What are you doing as far as MJG Capital? Are you getting into some of these financings? Are you looking for, you know, specific commodities, specific companies? Maybe just give us an update on how you're viewing this environment where companies are cashing up and what is MJG Capital doing?
Sure. So for MJG specifically, really we're not going to be deploying a slug of capital into this avalanche of financings, which it really does feel to be the case, particularly just in the past couple days, or at least past couple weeks since gold overtook that 2000 level. The reasons for that is we're already very well positioned. We sit at roughly 55% precious metal exposure, and that's including platinum group metals. And interestingly, our weighting towards silver equities is higher than towards gold equities. And I can't remember the last time that was the case. That's less of a concerted effort, to be fair, and more about specific opportunities that have caught my eye that happen to focus on silver over gold. So I don't want you to think that I'm, you know, juggling with the weightings, you know, too aggressively on metal price speculation. That's not the game I play. We're also running a little bit hotter in terms of cash positioning than I expected at this stage. So as it stands, we're going to put a little bit of money into an existing holding. It's a name we've talked about previously, Ridgeline Minerals, that we've discussed in the context of the CRD renaissance within Nevada and previous KE reports. So we'll be supporting that company and then chipping away on a few names in the open market. A couple prospect generators, a carbon credit royalty and streamer, and a rare earth focused position. But these are all existing holdings. So unless there's an absolutely can't miss opportunity, I wouldn't be surprised if we don't add a new name to the portfolio until Q3 of this year. That said, this doesn't mean that it's a bad time to deploy capital into these financings, particularly for those that feel light or have no exposure whatsoever to junior precious metal names. I still think that investors have the leverage over issuers at this stage in the market because there's so many companies coming to market at once right now, and we've yet to see major new inflows into the junior space. So, and the fact that the juniors haven't moved really at this point in the cycle. So for those that are evaluating financings and feel light on junior mining exposure, now I think would be a solid time to kind of pick your best one or two financings out of the dozens that are available and to deploy some capital.
Oh, Matt, there's so many juniors out there right now. I'm sure people are saying, look, I already have positions in some. Quite frankly, very few of the juniors have bucked the trend. The ones that have, well, they've been outperforming the sector for a while. What stocks, if you are out there kind of bottom fishing, what do you look for in a junior, considering a lot of them are looking to raise money? A lot of them say they're onto something, but what sets apart some of them?
Sure. Well, I mean, it comes down to people first, and I want to emphasize every single investment in the junior space should start with who is at the helm of the company, how well they're incentivized, how they got their shares, how many other obligations they have, whether they've succeeded previously in something that resembles the task at hand. You've got to start there. As I mentioned, I also like to assume spot metal prices when looking at the given asset. So even though I am bullish on gold and silver prices, I would encourage folks when they're evaluating specific, you know, development stage projects or producers not to get too greedy with their metal price assumptions. But when you're deciding, when you found a name that you like, and you're deciding whether and when to initiate a position, the key to look for is catalysts. And if the company has enough cash to take them into 2024, and there's one to two major potential share price catalysts in the calendar, then I think that's a great candidate for open market buying. Conversely, it can be a name that checks all the boxes: good people, good asset, good company structure, exciting catalysts over the next year. But if they don't have enough money to get to at least that next catalyst, and preferably a couple potential share price catalysts, then my recommendation would be to sit on one's hands, wait for their next financing opportunity, and then you can take your shot there. And if you're an investor that's not able to participate in private placements, then, you know, maybe it's best to focus on juniors that have exceptionally long runways. Or, you know, there's some companies out there that won't have to raise for a number of years. That's obviously the exception and not the norm within the junior space, but they're out there.
Some cogent thoughts there, Matt, on what to look for with companies and management teams, but also what to look out for. So definitely some thoughts for investors to consider as they deploy their capital into these avalanche of financings, and really just an interesting time where a lot of the seniors have moved and some of the mid-tiers in particular have moved. But there's a lot of juniors that are still hovering near the lower side of their chart range versus the higher side. So lots of opportunity out there. Outside of the precious metals, though, I know you also follow the battery metal space pretty closely. You know, things like copper, nickel, lithium, you know, anything catching your eye in those sectors right now?
Sure. Well, I would say generally, I'm a bit cautious on the rest of the metal cycle. And that's based on the assumption, and this may be an entirely incorrect assumption, that we will see continued turbulence in global equities going forward, and that the slowdown in economic growth has really yet to bite, at least in the Western world. So, you know, when it comes to metals like lithium, for instance, where there's just been an absolute boom of speculative activity, a ton of money put into exploring for new projects and, you know, fast-pacing development stage projects towards production. And then you also look at where lithium is going into. And sure, there are plenty of applications around the world, but the key driver right now is electric vehicles. And if you're going into a global slowdown scenario where we're going to see a cutback in consumer spending, I would be particularly cautious about the metals. You know, lithium you can throw into that bucket, rare earth metals perhaps, tin even, where the key drivers of demand are consumer electronics or consumer items like electric vehicles. You know, conversely, there are metals like copper, for instance, or vanadium, where the picture's a bit more murky because the demand sources for these metals, at least as it stands, are much more for industrial applications and for infrastructure buildouts in particular. And so even if there's a slowdown in consumer demand globally, we know for sure that there's a major infrastructure buildout occurring within the United States. And we also know that the Chinese economy is going, you know, from an absolute stop to full steam ahead in the matter of just a few months here. We're just getting out of the Chinese New Year. Really, regardless of whether we see Chinese consumer activity pick up the way that it could, we do know already that the Chinese government is going to, they've already committed to 20% more infrastructure and government capital spend this year than they did last year. And the ultimate number is probably going to be quite a bit higher than that. So I think they're going to make sure to hit 5% and aim for 6% growth over the course of 2023. And so it's a bit of a mixed picture for these other metals that are kind of caught in an interesting tug of war between infrastructure demand going, you know, very high this year in China compared to a slowdown in the rest of the world. And at least when it comes to copper, which as it stands is the largest metal by weighting within the MJG portfolio, I'd probably lean towards copper being the exception, at least out of the rest of the much of the rest of the metals complex, and would side with the Trafiguras and the Glencores and, you know, the Richard Atkinsons from Freeport of the world, who are projecting that we may see quite the squeeze in copper prices over the next 6 or 12 months, largely irrespective of consumer demand around the world. There's just not enough supply that is remotely close to being brought online, and there's copper being demanded from all different sectors of the economy, and then of course government investments that are occurring across the Western world that are just picking up in a big way in China. So yes, it's interesting. I think you got to look at each of these metals on a case by case basis, but in general, I would be a little less concerned about those where demand is more skewed towards infrastructure and more concerned about those where demand is more skewed to consumer consumption.
Matt, this times perfectly with actually a dinner I was having last night with a friend that runs a copper development company. He also is an advisor on a number of other copper companies. And he was telling me about the resource that they have. And we were talking IRR for porphyry assets, copper assets. And he was just saying that, look, pretty much every good porphyry asset has an IRR after tax of in the 20% range, 20 up to 25%. And I was telling him that just doesn't seem to move the needle for investors. How do you go about analyzing copper assets, defined projects, defined deposits that probably or at least are close to some economics? How do you go about analyzing those?
I will say, and this is somewhat unique within our portfolio because we do own plenty of what I consider high quality development projects. Right, I would define a high quality development project as an asset that has an initial CapEx that is well below after tax NPV, assuming reasonable metal prices and a reasonable discount rate, an after tax IRR that is north and hopefully well north of 25%, and a payback of less than 3 years after tax. This is obviously a high bar on all three of those fronts, but there are assets out there that check all three of those boxes. Those are the types of assets that you can be confident that, subject to permitting and social licensing going positively, and that's a big catalyst, that those projects can be brought online this cycle, either by the current development stage company that owns it, or it can be sold to a larger company and then advance from there. So we do have plenty of exposure to those types of projects within the MJG portfolio. That said, as it comes to copper, and I'm just looking at our six copper focused positions here, they're almost entirely either royalty focused or prospect generation, which is a bit unique. So as it stands, we don't actually have any single asset copper focused developers, even though copper is the largest weighting by metal within the MJG portfolio. But to your specific question, I think the point stands that it's difficult to have an extremely high RRR with porphyries. And that's also why we've seen a lot of these porphyry projects stall in development. I think that will change, but there are some very large later stage projects that can be brought to production within the next 2 to 3 years, but at least at current copper prices, they do not look attractive on paper. So for the developers and especially for the major miners that may ultimately build these assets, for them to start now, it takes a bit of a test of faith in the long-term price of copper, where if copper stays flat at $4 for the foreseeable future, sure, these assets will make some money with a 20% IRR, but given the risks entailed, that's not a particularly attractive proposition, because as we know, mine builds and ramp ups do not always go to plan. In fact, them going to plan is the exception and not the norm. So it takes a bit of faith that we're going to see $5 or $6 copper in the medium term for these groups to firmly press go. That said, given the sentiment that we've heard from some of the leaders of these key players, we're getting to the stage where I think companies are comfortable taking that risk, understanding that if they press go on a development stage project, it really doesn't matter what occurs with the copper price over the next 12 or even 24 months, because in order to get one of these mines actually up to nameplate production, we're talking about a 3 to 4 year lag. So yes, if these groups wait for $5 or $6 copper, these groups wait for the IRRs on paper to be 30% and higher, they'll be a bit behind the game. So I do understand how porphyries are a specific case here relative to your typical mineral project.
Well, Matt, just maybe let's widen the scope of the discussion up here a little bit more to how you approach things as a portfolio manager and looking at, you know, when you're going to deploy the balance of your cash. But also I want to cue in on something you said in passing that I think is an interesting point you've made in previous interviews. And that is sometimes you get exposure to commodities, not necessarily by chasing the hottest drill play or the development project, but using royalty companies that have exposure, like you mentioned there to copper, but you've mentioned that on other base metals before, even on fertilizers. And so I'd love you just to explain how you allocate your capital towards things like royalty companies to get exposure or prospect generators, or just how you manage your fund and portfolio.
Sure. Well, I would largely describe us as having four major buckets within the MJG portfolio. And these are business model buckets, I could describe it as. The first would be, you know, pre-discovery. And in the vast majority of cases, our pre-discovery names utilize the prospect generator business model. We've discussed this on previous programs. It's a business model that's utterly out of favor. It's been out of favor for at least 15, if not 20 years. But I think there's some excellent value to be had there. Groups with solid management team, plenty of cash in the bank, long runways before next financing, you know, major partners earning in on multiple projects. And so I keep a very close tab on the prospect generators. We have an internal model of roughly 40 of them between the United States, Canada, the UK, and Australia that we're tracking closely. And we own 5 or 6 of them within the MJG portfolio as it stands. So that's roughly 25% of our portfolio right there. The second bucket is we'll occasionally do the post-discovery play, as you mentioned. But those bets are few and farther in between. The most recent successful post-discovery speculation was Adriatic Metals. And that was all the way back in 2018. We still hold that position to this day, though, and that's been a major win for us, you know, where we were first buying shares at around Aussie 40 cents. We've since hiked up our cost basis quite a bit to closer to a dollar Aussie, but we're talking about a share price that's in the mid threes, you know, pushing $4 Aussie per share. We've made a couple post discovery speculations since that haven't panned out, and we've quickly sold the position and moved on. That's okay. That's part of the game there. That's another type of play that I keep an eye out for. The third would be what I described earlier, the high quality development projects. These are projects that I think can either be built or sold to a larger player to be built at spot, or in some cases lower than spot metal prices. So I do not assume pie in the sky metal prices. You know, even if we do see $3,000 gold this cycle, even if we do see, you know, $8 or $10 copper this cycle, I'd rather invest in the plays that make sense at current metal prices. And if metal prices work in our favor, then that's extra wind at our back. And then the fourth bucket is the royalty business model, as you say, in terms of all of our cash flowing investments. And the majority of the portfolio, you know, 70-odd% of the portfolio is speculative, you know, pre cash flow investments. Of the remainder of the portfolio, all positions except for one are royalty focused. And really, over the past 20 years, the royalty business model has been proven to be the safest and most long-term way to invest in mining. And that's certainly been true amongst precious metal focused royalty companies. I think we're going to see continued proliferation of royalty companies focused on base and battery metals and the rest of the metal complex. So I'm a firm royalty buff. I don't expect that to change anytime soon here. I will concede that at some point during the cycle, as we get into the late stages of a mining bull market, I think the miners and the actual operating names will provide substantially more leverage than the royalty focused positions. But again, I don't have confidence in my ability to be able to predict metal price fluctuations in the short term. So I would much rather take a longer term approach, and the royalty business model falls right into that.
Matt, great thoughts. We'll wrap it up here. Look, there's a lot of places to invest your money in the resource space, a lot of different stage companies and a lot of different strategies out there, right? So you really do need to find the strategy and the companies that fit, I guess, your risk tolerance. And again, I like your outlook, never trying to predict where metals prices are going, because quite frankly, that gets a lot of traders on the wrong side of things simply because they hear from a lot of people that things are going up, up, up. And if that doesn't play out, well, sometimes they get a little too invested or maybe even a little too diversified in some of the smaller or more risky companies. Matt, thank you as always for your time. It's great chatting with you. We'll chat again hopefully next month. I hope you have a great rest of your weekend.
You as well, Corey. That was fun. Talk soon.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.